started out with Aries, we said that represented an assertion. And that assertions always end up in responsibilities, especially for people with an Aries temperament. They jump out there and they have responsibilities before they know it. And then after that, Gemini comes along and there has to be an adjustment. And Gemini is a sign that loves adjusting things. Then comes Cancer, which represents an acclimatization, getting used to the whole environment. Then comes Leo, which represents a demand. When you are adapted to a situation, then demands are placed upon you. But when demands are placed upon you, there is maintenance. You have to take care of things, so that Virgo represents maintenance. But it isn't just a matter of keeping the same old. You have to make improvements. And the improvements in the form of refinement come from Libra. So we see that there's a general development of any kind of assertion as we progress through the zodiac. When refinement takes place, there are some things that are not refined, and they have to be eliminated. The elimination process is represented by Scorpio. But when things are refined, you want them to be uplifted. And that upliftment or edification is ruled by Sagittarius. But when things are uplifted for all of society to see in a very graphic way, in a way that's present for everyone, that results in fame or honor. And Capricorn represents that kind of fame or honor. Now, when you have a good thing going, you don't want it to be just limited to a very few. So what happens after the fame or notoriety of Capricorn comes universalization. Aquarius represents universalization. It doesn't like things to be too local or to be concentrated in one particular spot. It wants things universalized everywhere. If Scorpio represents dissolution, and Sagittarius represents projection, and Capricorn represents a consequent precipitation, there's always a correction in the zodiac. And with the precipitation, like especially of different geological strata, is this consciousness of history. And things get very old very fast with the Saturnian type of consciousness. So what the cosmos needs is what Aquarius provides, and that is novelty. Things that are new, things that are different, things that are unprecedented. Capricorn likes precedents. Aquarius likes unprecedented things. Scorpio represents trial. And, as we just said, Sagittarius represents edification. Capricorn represents dignification. That's not the way Aquarius looks at it. It's not so concerned about dignity. It wants things humanized. It wants things humane. Or it wants things humanitarian. Those are all good keywords to understand the principle that is Aquarius. It is probably the most human of all of the airy signs, which are sometimes called human signs. If Scorpio represents elimination, and Sagittarius represents general metabolism, and Capricorn represents aging through the calcification process, what Aquarius represents is vitalization. We've taken a step beyond the physical plane when we come to Aquarius. We're in a realm that is a realm of etheric energy or a vital energy. And so that kind of thing is just, again, the perfect antidote for a world that would become too hard and stony if it were left to Capricorn. Scorpio likes to destroy things. Sagittarius likes to aspire to things. Capricorn takes aspiration and turns it into ambition. But Aquarius is a little bit more cool than that. It likes interest in things, but it is an indifferent kind of interest. It's more like the interest of a scientist. It's, you know, like you can't have any personal feelings about this. So there is in Aquarius, as in all of the air signs, a tendency toward curiosity. Scorpio represents rebellion. Sagittarius represents approval. Capricorn represents management. Aquarius doesn't like that. Aquarius wants equality. And if it were up to Aquarius, it would be by consensus. Even if the whole world had to come to a consensus about things, that's the Aquarian way. Scorpio likes intensity. Sagittarius likes goodness. Capricorn likes propriety. But Aquarius likes altruism. The love of the whole, or the love of the individual as representative of the whole. If we look at progression through the houses along with the signs, we see that the first house is pioneering. The second house is settlement. And the third house is elementary practicality. And the fourth house is familiarization with things. And the fifth house represents the first accomplishment. Something has been done for the first time. But then it has to be corrected and improved. And that comes with the sixth house. And if it is a matter of adjudication of whether the corrections are right or not, that is like the seventh house. The eighth house, things have become so socialized that there has to be a common financial basis for everyone. And with the ninth house, it represents the state of consciousness where people become philosophically aware. But the tenth house represents standards, represents objectives, and those standards or objectives in people represent authority. So the 10th house is an authoritarian sign. Again, the 11th house comes along and it has the Aquarian attitudes, and that is democratization. You can't just have one leader, it has to be all democratic. Scorpio represents reaction. Sagittarius represents affirmation. Capricorn represents limitation or control through negation. But the way Aquarius approaches a new product, a new problem, or a new people, or something like that, is they befriend something. Meaning to say, let's get familiar with this before we do anything. And it might just as well be an amiable, friendly kind of interaction that we have. The eighth house represents loss. The ninth house represents transcendence over loss. The tenth house represents honor. And the 11th house represents a different kind of experience. It represents intuitive experience. Even if it's just in the form of a dream. Jeez, it puts me awfully easy on these Aquarians tonight. They're a sign that's supposed to be in particular. I'm going to make some kind of correction in there. Leo represents individual love, or the fifth house even more than Leo. The 11th house represents universal love. We're looking at a sign and a house and its opposite. Leo, with the sun, represents centralization. Aquarius represents diffusion, spreading things out to the perimeter, even things like electric fields, not gravitational fields, which are Taurus, electrical fields. And it works out in the body this way because Leo represents the heart. And the general circulatory system is ruled by Aquarius. Later on, we'll find specifics about the circulatory system. So the core is Leo, and the perimeter is Aquarius. The concept of Leo is the concept of heat and of heating. The character of Aquarius is cool or cooling. It's not cold the way Capricorn can be cold, even though it's cold at this time of the year. It's cool, and it's sort of like an indifferent kind of coolness. Leo likes despotism. Aquarius likes democracy. Leo, given full rein, would be tyranny. Aquarius, it would be freedom. It's one of the very biggest words for Aquarius is freedom. And sometimes Aquarian people cannot make up their mind about things. And they become prisoners of their own freedom, because if they make up their mind, then they no longer have freedom. And so then things get, if you don't make up your mind, things get made up for you, and by default you end up losing your freedom by trying to preserve it. There are, there are paradoxes in all signs, but most especially there are paradoxes in Aquarius. Leo likes to dominate. Aquarius likes independence. When we look at the symbol of Aquarius, we find two horizontal lines, and they're completely non-contiguous. In fact, they are the only non-contiguous parallel lines in the entire zodiac. Gemini has two sets of parallel lines, but they're bound, and there is that limitation. Libra has two sets of parallel lines, but there is an implied fulcrum in the scale. In Aquarius, there are two lines, and they're always apart. So the way Sagittarius works is by analogy, like proportional triangles or something of that kind of analogy. Aquarius is similar, but it does so in a different way. It works with parallelism, that there are parallels that run along coincident in time. It's very much like that untrue statement of Carl Jung, which is called synchronicity. Carl Jung would not have a synchronous activity with causality. He calls it synchronicity. He calls it an acausal principle. And he was afraid, he says it right in the book, he says, we know there is no vertical connection between the parallels, because if there were, there would be magic. And we all know there is no magic. Maybe he knows that there is no magic, but I don't. So there are two parallels, each ruled by one of the co-rulers of Aquarius. The upper parallel is ruled by Uranus, and the lower parallel is ruled by Saturn. So the two of these together represent what Aquarius is most famous for, science. There are two different kinds of science, scientists, and if you let each of them alone, there would never be any science. There are the data takers, which are the Saturnian type, and they always get more and more points on the curve, and they have more and more data. But if you have the Uranian type all alone with no bounds, you have wild speculation. You have crackpot speculation. But when you have data that is accurate, and then you intuit on what is suggested by the data, there is when you have science. It's a blending between phenomenal things and noumenal things, between data and meaning of data. Other people have seen the symbol of Aquarius as lightning bolts. And that describes Uranus very well. It does things very often, suddenly. Everything is new, like an intuition comes in, and everything that has been before is completely wiped out by it. It is those momentary lightning-like experiences that Aquarius thrives on. Each of those intuitive experiences is a moment of the eternal. It's a very tiny corpuscle of it, because we can't really, or most people can't, fully appreciate a total experience of the eternal, but a little eureka every now and then, or a little intuition, is what Aquarius represents. We're talking about special events here, things that no one ever would have thought of, because they're beyond the realm of thought. There is truth that thought points to, and there are principles or concepts that contain truth, but there is also truth that is a reality unto itself, and the experience of that in minute is what an intuitive experience is. Another way of looking at this is as flows of ions. The whole ionosphere and all of the particles that are freely roaming around with only a charge, that is very much of an Aquarian idea. It is from the charge that when it gets grounded, Uranus, who rules Aquarius, has its detriment, has its fall in Taurus. So, and that represents the grounding of anything electric. You know, Taurus, if it isn't solid and if it isn't bedrock, it isn't true. Whereas that's the thing that Aquarius can't stand at all. The lightning bolts represent inspirations. And Sagittarius is an inspirational sign. In fact, both of the Jupiterian signs are inspirational. But Aquarius has its own kind of inspiration. There's no order to it at all. Aquarius is probably the most non-lineal sign in the entire zodiac. It is supra-conceptual. That's the view of life that it has. It loves transcendence. Another way of looking at the symbol is waves. Now, with Gemini, we saw polarities. And with Libra, we saw libration. But with Aquarius, we see waves, the propagation or the transmission of something in a free form without the need of wires like Gemini has, or without it having to be based on one central point the way Aquarius does. In the stellar zodiac, the latter part of Capricorn all the way through Pisces is called the sea. And so this is part of that, but it's more like a sea of what physics would call plasma. It's like a sea of energy. So it's sort of like surfing in ionic impulses. From the viewpoint of etheric vision, it represents a sea of life. It represents interdimensional kinds of transportation. It's something that is completely transparent. It's like a sea of glass. Aquarians love things that are transparent. Yes? And Libra, the two other air signs. Oh, okay. Yes, okay. Yeah. All right. In the pictorial zodiac, there are several images for the constellation of Aquarius. All of them have a human being in them. And the human being is always androgynous. It has those male and female characters. The very ancient one is of a man kneeling down toward the two fishes of Pisces. And this is the symbol of John the Baptizer. When it says, whose shoes latchet I am unworthy to unleash, is a reference to saying that John the Baptist is an Aquarian precursor of the coming of Christ. We'll be talking about that in 2 weeks. We'll be talking about all kinds of wild different things. The most common presentation of Aquarius is as the water bearer. And it is an androgyne figure with a pitcher of water on his right shoulder. And out of that pitcher of water flows the water that becomes the river Eridanus that runs along quite a bit of the zodiac. It's probably one of the longest constellations in the entire zodiac. In fact, the big fish, which is not one of the two fish of Pisces, is in that river. Now, this image of Aquarius is very excellent because Aquarians represent that male-female quality. It is the sign of androgyny. If you see pictures of Wolfgang Mozart, that is a good example of an Aquarian type of face because it's both male and female. The pictures on the east wall in the front room here are Aquarian types of pictures, but not as good as Mozart is. But the water bearer is in control of the water that's being poured out. In the first place, it's generous. Aquarius is a generous sign, though sometimes the lower Saturnine side can be pretty stingy. But we'll come to that in a little bit. We're going to rub Ronald Reagan's nose in all of the Aquarians' faces. All right. But they're generous. But there is control. Water has always represented emotion. And you have to have that cool kind of quality of how much water you let go and how much you hold in. Obviously, since it's been running for centuries and centuries, there is an endless supply of water in the pitcher. And that suits Aquarius very well because it's the sign that likes infinity. So let's talk about very few animals. We encounter this problem every time that we come to one of the human signs. That is Gemini, Virgo, or Libra. They are human signs, and the signs that are most human are the signs that have the least animals associated with them. I'm sure there are other animals than the very few that we're going to talk about, and I would very much like to study zoology, not the way they study it at the university, but I would like to understand the habits and the attitudes of all kinds of different species, because it would certainly, doing that and getting an understanding of it, it would certainly expand a view of astrology. There may not be enough time in life for me to do it, but some of you are young enough that you can do it. I would be very much in favor of it. Yes? Yeah. They're all human. The Gemini is the two twins, and Libra is the Lady Justice holding the scales, and Virgo is the Virgin holding the stalks of grain. Aquarius is also human, but that's the one we're talking about. Those are also the four most mental signs, and that's the definition of the human. A human is a rational animal, so to speak, and that's why they're considered the human signs. All right, the family, the singular family we're going to talk about are the bears. And let's look at some of the general characteristics of bears first. First, next to Taurus, Aquarius likes to sleep. And we have the sleeping bears. That's the way they're pictured in the zodiac, or in as the two great bears at the North Pole, Ursa Major and Ursa Minor. They are seen as sleepers, and they have that ability to control their temperature and sleep through winter. All of the fixed signs like sleeping, but Aquarius is one of the more voluntary sleepers. The bears have been pictured often as dancers. And that is Aquarius, except that they're not, you know, the bears are not very gainly dancers. They improvise. There is a sign of spontaneity and improvisation. Do you know that dance is the art that you have to know the least amount to improvise in it? To improvise in music these days, you have to know quite a bit. But to improvise in dance, you can begin right at the beginning doing that. And then there is the thing about bears that they hug. We all have heard of bear hugs and things like that. It's a sign of affection. It is, we haven't come to the kissing sign yet, but this is a more impersonal kind of affection because you don't have to worry about passing any germs or anything like that. So this is a sign of human fellowship. And the people who are said to be born under the bear, that is the Russians, are famous for their hugging. In fact, the Great Bear falls over Russia if you orient the stars correctly. Bears are known for their claws. They open things. They expose things. This is the sign of discovery. Yes, there is this. It is a sign of expose also, but they like to bring things out into the open. And they have no mane, and they have no horns, and they have a small tail. So they have to have some way for the excess creative energy to be expressed, and it goes into bear's claws. This is why Native Americans, sensing this, have bear's claws as very powerful talismans, because they have that great... they had that great power and strength to them. Now, there are bears that live in tropical climates. But for the most part, bears like it cold. They're the opposite of Leo cats. You find some big cats in the northern climes, but most of the big cats are near the equator. And with bears, most of the bears you find in the north, and very few at the equator, or at the poles, and very few at the equator. That brings on a story. I have very little material, so I have to tell all kinds of stories. It's the story of the three bears that were on an ice floe. They were on this block of ice, and it was a long way before they could get near to something so that they could swim. So they're riding hour and hour after on the ice floe, and the father bear says, "I have a tale to tell." And he tells this big, long story, and it goes on for hours, and they all look at when they can swim, and it's still a ways off. And so the mother bear gets up and says, "I have a tale to tell." And so she starts telling this long, long matriarch story. She gets done, and they look, and it's still a long distance yet. And so the father bear and the mother bear look at the little baby bear, and the little baby bear gets very self-conscious and starts crying, and it says, "My tale's told." Not very much of a story. Polar bears are the ultimate in cold loving. And they're white. They don't even have color to them. They're neutral. They live where there's no place to hide. And Aquarius is the sign of exhibitionism. I was married to an amoral Aquarian. Not an immoral Aquarian, an amoral Aquarian. She would have loved to have lived in a glass house and practiced nudism. And it wasn't that she thought her body was beautiful or anything like that. It was just like, well, this is a natural thing to do. It's a, you know, the Aquarians get these ideas about what is just a perfectly natural thing to do, and they do them, not realizing that everybody else thinks it's terribly outrageous. Polar bears live a very lonesome and solitary existence. Sometimes they have a hard time mating because the distance between bears is very, very long. So there's a quality of humanitarian things to them. They're fiercely predatory and carnivorous, but they're not like the cats. The cats will destroy things that they don't eat. The bears are very, they don't do anything that's unnecessary. This is the thing about Aquarius. Even though it's generous, it isn't wasteful. It will be parsimonious for some very good reason. And sometimes polar bears seem to be irrationally violent. And irrationality is a quality of Aquarius. It's sort of like Eve in, what's his name? Mark Twain, in his story of Adam and Eve, the diary of Adam and Eve. Adam writes in the diary, "Well, she did it to me again today. We were naming the animals, and she said, let's call this one a cow. And I said, why do you want to call it a cow? And she said, it looks like a cow, doesn't it? And and that's an Aquarian kind of thinking. It's just very unpredictable. And it's got its own sense of logic. And polar bears are playful, very playful. I heard an interview at one time on public radio about this scientist who was up near the Arctic, near the North Pole, and he had his German Shepherd along. And he was doing something that was just out. There was nothing to see except ice and snow. And along comes this polar bear. And the polar bear comes up to the German Shepherd, and they start playing. And they play for about 45 minutes or an hour. And then the polar bear makes a sign, the play is over. The polar bear leaves, and the dog goes back to doing its doggy things. And this happened several times over. It was this quality that you have to be able to play. And this is something that Aquarius and Leo both share in common. It's a likelihood to want to play at things. Only the sophistication of play for an Aquarius is at a much higher level than it is for Leos. Black bears. Very omnivorous. They will eat anything. There are only three kinds of mammal flesh that you can get trichinosis roundworm from, and they are pigs, humans, and black bears. You can get the worms from them. They're both shy and violent at the same time. It's interesting that the sign that most likes intuitive interruptions gets startled and loses it easily. Now I have a question to pose. If you have a member of the black bear species that is an albino, do you have a white black bear? I believe you do, but I have no like language in a very funny way. Brown bears are, again, very much attracted to humans. They're the bears that are most likely to be tamed and most likely to be in human presence. And those are the ones that, if you go to places like Yellowstone and places like that, you'll find a lot of brown bears coming to you. Grizzlies, very, very, very shy. And Aquarius is one of this, it's shy and outrageous at the same time. It's all of those paradoxes, such a strangely thing. And grizzlies are very unpredictable, just as Aquarius is very unpredictable. And sometimes they are aggressively extroverted, sort of like electric rock or something like that. Panda bears, which are not actually bears, they're more of a raccoon than they are a bear. But they are subject more than anything else to human caricature. And they are used to represent the human condition. They have peculiar eating habits. They are monivores. And they also are extremely shy. I have no other animals for Aquarius. It's just too human. And I'm just too humane, I guess. Mythologically, all of the myths of hermaphrodites and androgynes are represented, representative of Aquarius. This is not being split into parallel genders, it's where they are both together. Hermaphrodites are people who have both sets of genitalia, and androgynes are people who have characteristics in their makeup of both male and female. They have a face that is a unisex face. And so there is something in the Aquarius, it's just very future-oriented. It wants things new in the same way that Capricorn looks toward the past. Aquarius is always looking toward the future. And there's a recognition that the sexual differentiation after the physical Earth has dissolved and we can live in the more fluidic inner worlds, that sexual differentiation will no longer be necessary for procreation. There will be other ways to do that. And so there is this quality of bringing together the male and female, because in the inner body, you are of the opposite gender. When you see somebody in their etheric makeup, like in my etheric makeup, I'm a female. This is why, as the inner body develops, as we go on in life, that an old man becomes a sweet old woman, whereas a woman, as she progresses, becomes more of a rough-and-tumble kind of man person, willing to take control of the reins and things like that. And this has something to do with creativity, because it is through intuition that creativity takes place, and creativity takes place by uniting the masculine and feminine forces within ourselves. Now, it does turn out to be the sign that rules transsexuality, asexuality, bisexuality, homosexuality, and any other kind of ambiguity that you can think of, that those are all Aquarian things. In mythology, the original Aquarian was called Ganymede. He was a young boy who looked perfect. You couldn't tell the difference whether he was a boy or a girl, and Zeus fell in love with him and took the form of an eagle and took a hold of him and took him up into the heavens, and he is now seen as Aquila the eagle. It's a good summer constellation to see. It represents transcendence. The eagle represents the spinal consciousness at the top of the spine. So there's something here that when a person unites the male and female energy that transverses the spine and becomes spiritually creative, they become an eagle-like creature. So Ganymede was the original cupbearer for the gods. We said earlier that Aquarius is right in the heart of what is called the sea. But it is the sea that is chaotic. Not the same kind of chaos that Pisces is, but it is a sea of disorganization of a different variety, which we do not have time to go into. But the sea is the creative source for everything that comes into being in planetary or stellar existence. It has to do, the C represents interplanetary or interstellar space. And Saturn is the gatekeeper. And it is through Saturn that new things are brought into existence in the phenomenal world. And when things are shuffled into chaos, Saturn was called the gateway to chaos at one time. We'll talk a lot about this when we talk about the planet Uranus, but Uranus rules Aquarius. And Uranus in mythology was incestuous. And in fact, if you think about it, all creation myths, to get from the one to the many, all creation myths are some form of incest. Whereas all myths that indicate the end of things, all of them are cannibalism myths. Because when the many are consumed and taken back into complete and absolute unity, it is like something eating its own creations. That's an aside. But Uranus was the original sky god creator. And he was castrated by Cronos, the ruler of Capricorn. And from then on, Uranus was manifest as a higher type of creator, not a creator of things or of objects that come into being, but the creator of the ideas or the patterns out of which objects are made. And that's very much the Aquarius kind of thing. It wants to create the general idea, and it doesn't always want to go through all of the details of carrying it out into finality. Very interesting kind of consciousness. In biblical mythology, Aquarius and the 11th house are the upper room. If you read the gospel very carefully, they're told to go to a place where there is a man with a pitcher of water, and it is an upper room. And it is in that upper room that the foot washing takes place. And it is in that upper room where the doctrine of universal friendship is put forth. In fact, Aquarius was called the Son of Man. And that is one of the names of Jesus. I won't go into the side trip on that because it's way too long. Biblically, it is Reuben. In Genesis, it is a very obscure reference. It talks about sexual defilement, and that is the Hebrew version of the incestuous nature of Uranus. But in Deuteronomy, it is predicted, "Let thy men be many and not few." Seasonally, here in the northern hemisphere, this is the full fixation of winter. This is die-hard winter that won't let go. Snow and cold are fun, at least for a while, but when they persist, things get difficult. The air is dry, and Aquarius is really a dry sign, but it's a fresh kind of dryness. Like the poles, especially Antarctica, are deserts. Antarctica is the driest desert in the world. But if you heat air, it gets drier and drier because it leaves all the precipitation behind. And then it keeps getting forced out by new air until it comes to the pole. And at the pole, it becomes ionized, which is very much an Aquarian thing. So in winter, the air is very clean, it's very crisp, and the stars even twinkle more because there's more ionization in the air. And it's very healthy. I don't think living in hot weather all the time is a healthy thing at all. But if you have a good burst of cold, it's a great benefit to the body. Cold, in some ways, is an equalizer. People who live in northern climes all know that we're all subject to the cold, and so that everyone must see each other as equal. And then we had the people that live near the poles, at least in the north. We have what the French call the Eskimos, but we call them the Inuits, and they are very loving people, and they have hospitality. That if you visit an Inuit home, like if I were to go, the Inuit would offer me his wife for warmth, of course. But this whole, we're dealing with the sign here that believes in free love and anything goes kind of thing. It's funny that they're reserved and anything goes at the same time. It's a most unusual kind of consciousness. Now, each of the signs presents a difficulty in how do you get to the ideas and present those ideas in a way that a person can understand them. And Aquarius is probably the most difficult of all, because it deals with a cosmological state that is so difficult that many people do not believe in it at all. Whether you choose to believe in it or not doesn't make any difference to me. Just consider it a fairy tale. Now, when we talked about Sagittarius, we talked about transcendentalism. We talked about transcending matter, vitality, even feelings and emotions, and even concrete thought. Anything concrete that has a beginning or an end can be transcended. But we transcended to the realm of abstract thought, of principles, of universal ideas. But that realm still has structure in it. An idea has a structure in it. If it's a mythical idea, it's the name, it's the character of the story. If it is a scientific idea, it is the formula that describes it. It shows its internal limits. But what we're talking about with Aquarius is transcending even ideas. And that is, one transcends to a realm of pure truth and to a realm that is pure light. But it's not light like we see coming out of these bulbs. It is intelligible light. It is like the light when you discover the truth of something and the lights go on in your consciousness, except that it is just the lights but without the idea. It is pure knowing of truth. And because it is light knowing light and becoming light, it is perfectly clear. And this is why when this idea gets misunderstood, there is this light of transparency and there is this light of nudism. I have a lot of Iranian things in me, and for years I had to fight the desire when giving a talk to take off all of my clothes. And I finally analyzed myself psychologically on that, and I wanted there to be no barriers between myself and to the people that I was speaking, and clothes seemed like a barrier, and they represent like they really weren't me. I'm not the fashion plate type. And that if you are naked, what do we say? It's the naked truth. And that is an Aquarian kind of idea. So nakedness and transparency are all tied together. And it is that realm that is represented by the higher lightning stroke of the two. So on that level, we're dealing with something that is completely unconditioned, something that is completely unconditional, and something that is completely without restraint. The Aquarian love of friendship knows no bounds. You would do anything for the sake of friendship. On the Saturnine level, on the lower level, it tries to take and bring all of the energy into harness. It tries to utilize it, and it tries to be as efficient as it can be. So one level wants things to be crystal clear with no definitions. It wants everything to be limpid, intelligible light. The other level would settle for glass, especially since it insulates and you can control etheric energy and hold it within that. So one level wants immediate awakening, and it wants universal awareness, and it doesn't care about proof. Let it have the experience, and that is enough. The discovery is the all. Now, that's fine as long as there's no need for a proof. Not even, you know, they don't even want inductive proof. But when it gets put to use, then the Aquarius thing comes in. Aquarius loves gadgets. You know, you can... You can make, if you're a gadget salesman, all you have to do is pick out where the Aquariuses live, and if it's electronic, and if it's the newest kind of electrical gadget, you've made a sale right then and there. So you have divine intelligence that is imageless, and it wants nothing for itself, but all for the sake of others. On the other, you have the sign of massive education, extreme erudition, and something that is very conservative, and it wants to take and know everything in a definite way. For Aquarius, it doesn't make any difference. If you have the truth, you can make get all those definite things whenever you want them. Now, both levels like universality, but one likes it from above and likes it even beyond abstraction. The lower Saturnian level likes universals in isolation. And so both of them have a shyness. The shyness of, you know, people are shy because they're protecting something inside of themselves that they hold very, very dear. And little children are shy because they know that there's something precious in them. A person who has no shyness, who is just vulgarly open and will tell you anything about them with no shyness at all, is a person who doesn't have anything sacred in them. A person who has something sacred always has some degree of shyness. That's neither here nor there. All right. So one is of a universal conception, and the other is an estimate or an approximation of universality. This is the sign that likes infinities, but even more so, it likes statistics, because statistics represent universals, even if they aren't universals. And Saturn will settle for a poor man's universality. Now, both of these are deep, but the depth is not as important to either side of Aquarius as the immediacy. Both sides are relatively unemotional, and both sides are tending toward preoccupation. Both are at least a little organized. The Saturnine part is especially organized. Both are slow about everything except intuition. And the intuitions are most unusual. Ronald Reagan had an intuition. It was a really ingenious idea. And his idea was, when he was the governor of California, he looked at the size of the debt of the state. And he figured it out, and he said, if all state workers would donate one day's work without pay, we would have no state debt. And it made sense to him. The altruism made sense to him. The numbers made sense to him. It seemed so clear that we would be free of debt. But he had no idea about the selfish nature of people, that they weren't going to give up a whole day's work for nothing. And, you know, so, and that's the kind of Aquarian kind of consciousness that becomes manifest. So it's a sign of initiation or ignition or something like that. It strikes like lightning. Now, one of the things about this sign is that it's so clear and so simple that it's sometimes difficult to distinguish different characteristics. It's like trying to be able to distinguish between the medium carrying light and the light itself, because they're both the same thing, and it's very hard to do that. And if something is so transparent and you're looking right through it, you can't see what you're looking through. And that is, and when you see the psychological equivalent of that in an individual, it's very hard. And for the Aquarius, who can see all things, sometimes there are no problems. You go to Aquarius, say, well, there's this problem. aquariuses, there's no problem, especially if it's a very intelligent aquarius. The answer that comes out is it's trivial because they can see right through it. It's hard sometimes to get an opinion or an evaluation out of somebody who has a lot of Aquarius consciousness. I have one friend that has the sun in Aquarius, and on many occasions I have asked for opinions about things and nada. We won't say who that is. All right, let's look at some of the philosophical and the spiritual ideas. The coherency of this transcendent realm is such that even though there is no resistance, it's irrefragable. You can't cut into it. You can't break into it. It's like pure truth. You can't separate. And this is why this is the level which in mystic Christianity we call the life spirit, which is the realm of Christ consciousness. And this is why Christ is called the rock, because it's impregnable. And some, I don't know how to say it, if you experience that pure kind of love, there can be no doubt. Anything that you have ever had any concern about at all, if you experience that, there's never any doubt anymore. You're adamantine in your psychological makeup. And because it is beyond ideas, it's beyond astrology. And so therefore, we have to pick up a few random things to use as touchstones. And randomness is the first one. It's the first of these ideas, because if things are super irrational and it's all one truth, there is no randomness. But from this level where everything is organized and we can't see the unity that's behind everything, some things seem random. And what to us is random may be very tendentially creative by beings working from this level of existence. It's a really interesting thing. And so the whole idea of randomness to get to universality, or using randomness to tie together something that is to pull apart something that is universal. Like, again, Mozart was an Aquarius, and he could read in the world of concrete thought, and he would get an entire symphony in a fraction of a second, but it was an integral whole. And in order to break it out and turn it into a symphony, he had to do something to break up that irrefragability. And what he did is he would take a pool ball and he would just bounce it off of the off of the cushions, and by watching the random patterns of the pool ball, he would get ideas of how you can delineate something that was very very one thing only. So in randomness, where things are para-rational or super-rational or irrational and rational all at the same time, it makes this sign seem completely non-linear. Now, the philosophy of Aquarius is the philosophy of freedom. And that is freedom without restraint or without any kind of barrier. Now, in Aquarians, that can vary all the way from violent revolution to, without any restraint to it all, or a form of freedom that is ultimately considerate of the consciousness of the other. In the Saturnian side, there's a touch of selfishness, and so the idea of freedom becomes laissez-faire, which means that the rich men always win out. They now call it market economy or deregulation, and the water that comes down from the pitcher now is called trickle down. Yeah, it's amazing the way these things all fit together. It's quite something. Aquarius represents a love of newness. And whether that is some kind of shock art or whether it's venture capitalism. There's something exciting about being right with the new wave of things. It's sort of like catching lightning, but not grounding it, being able to hold it. But it all changes when you get a hold of it. It's a more, there are usually more people who go from the Uranian side of Aquarius to the Saturnian than there are that go from the Saturnian to the Uranian, but it does happen once in a while. Like Ronald Reagan began as a union activist and ended up as a conservative. And Plato went from a near radical in what he got from Socrates to the end of his life, he was nearly a fascist. And it's quite interesting. Now, if we take Saturn and Uranus and put them together, we mentioned that that represents science. But it represents much more than science. If you take intuition and if you make it practical, that represents any kind of invention or ingenuity. Sometimes it is very strange inventiveness, like Rube Goldberg kinds of inventions or things like that. Sometimes it is, a perfect example, is taking a crystal and using that crystal to pick up the waves that are in the ethers and making a radio out of them. Now that's really invention. Or seeing a can of Campbell's soup as art is another kind of invention. It's like looking at something like you've never looked at it before. I bet you a lot of people never looked at a can of Campbell's soup except to see what variety it was. And when they looked at it and saw that somebody put in effort to design and to make that, and that there really was a symmetry to it and all of that, that was really an invention. Since all concepts and ideas are united in this single truth, this is the sign of paradox. And so it's filled with all kinds of things and their opposite. So you find some of the things that we've already mentioned. You find openness. Openness to the degree of exhibitionism. But at the same time, there's shyness and even inhibition. There are concepts of totality. As we approach the Aquarian age, we're coming to notions of holism. And those are expressed either in universal erudition, where you try to see that everything is all tied together, or they're expressed in just the opposite. Like, can you imagine that millions of years of history are recorded in one seed? The genetic history of a whole species is crystallized into that one little thing. So it's that kind of consciousness. Intuition is eternal. And it's just as eternal as if you have a full-fledged enlightenment. When you get a hit, even if you get a hit like your child is in trouble or something like that, that moment, if you can sink into it, is absolutely no different than having a full-blown experience of Christ. Identification with either the higher or lower side of Aquarius brings one in touch with divine beings. And so either the higher side Aquarian or the lower side Aquarian, if there's self-consciousness in that, the same sign that is so very unself-conscious and conscious of the other, when it does become self-conscious, is horribly egoistic. It's an Aquarian or an Uranian kind of egoism that's universal. Man, I'm the universal truth kind of that kind of scope of egoism. Now, if we try to comprehend the eternal rationally, we come to things like infinities. And Shard can tell you all kinds of things about infinities, and they're fascinating, about how infinities fit into other infinities, and that there are infinitesimal infinities as well as macrocosmic infinities. So we're dealing with paradox. you don't expect to have much interaction with an Aquarius and having a regular logical flow of things, because just about the time that you think that you know what the next step is going to be, they come up with something else. So the grand knowledge, the infinite knowledge is, like if you've ever read Darwin's Origin of the Species, the amount of information that is in that book is fantastic. But if you take and apply the Saturnian quality to it and try to put it in the social dimension, you have social Darwinism. So you have these, Aquarius represents things that evolve in an evolutionary fashion. It isn't surprising that Darwin was an Aquarius, because he had that thing where you progressively see something unfolding out of another thing. Now, there are some things that are ruled by Aquarius that we want to look at a little bit. Altruism. And altruism is love without restraint, without qualification, and without any kind of personal respect whatsoever. And it's love that is kept infinitely. Now, a lot of academic philosophers don't like the whole idea of altruism. They say it can't be true. They say, I give you a dollar, and then you give it back to me, and then I give it to you, or I give it to Shared, and he passes it on. And if you pass it back and forth, where's the altruism? They're thinking only about love. They're not talking about the life. They're talking only about form. They're not talking about the life and the love that it takes place in that kind of sharing, because that's what it really is. When you're sharing the universal love, that universal love knows itself in both the sharer and the recipient of the sharer. It's a very beautiful, beautiful concept. Aquarius, when it gets applied to more mundane things, results in romanticism. We're not talking about boy-girl romance. That's more of Libra. But we're talking about romantic poetry like Byron and Keats and Shelley and people like that, where they have flaming tigers and snow-white skin and all of those things carried to extreme is Aquarian. Another Aquarius notion, though it's more of a notion in head because it never works out physically, is the whole idea of dalliance. The love of a moment, or the love in a moment. The whole idea of make love, not war, and free love, and all of those things are very Aquarian. And if you keep them in the Aquarian sphere, it's fine. It's when you try to bring them into the physical sphere that things get difficult. Humanism. Humans are foci of God. The love that humans can share is literally the love of God, and it applies to everyone. And the respect of other humans as being spokespeople and as representations and channels of love is a really wonderful idea. However, some forms, secular humanism, doesn't turn out to be too progressive at all. It's not an evolutionary philosophy, because if you are a secular humanist, you must accept people as they are, because that's what they are, and you accept them as that. But if you do that, there's no room for progress. So we have to have a few Scorpios around that goad people a little bit to have a little more progress. There are some unique Aquarian attitudes that are very strong, that are lovely attitudes. Wonder, awe, curiosity, amazement, omnipresence. All of those are Aquarian attitudes, and they're very excellent things. However, if one identifies with any of them, it leads to a freezing or to a rigidification or a stubbornness or an egoism or a pride that that is anything but likable. But because it's based on some kind of universal truth, there is residually in all of the pride and egoism of Aquarius, there is a kind of snobbery or a priggery or something like that that can come in. So it's a hard sign to be able to put into words. It's a hard sign to contain, but it certainly is a likable sign. Nature forces, ionization, especially free ionization of the upper atmosphere. Energies run and flow freely without having to even be attached to any nucleus of any kind. Electricity and electromagnetism, especially the fields and the shocking stratification. The whole idea of invisible communication in the air or radio. The whole idea of static, large charge buildups that produce interference in local atmospheres. The whole concept of vitalism, that is a quasi-structured life flow and life form that lends life to things that live. Probability, where randomness and rational thought come together. You would even say to some extent, or shared with Pisces, the whole idea of chaos science and chaos mathematics. Statistics, approximations, because you can't count all the people. An approximation is often good enough. Induction, especially mathematical induction. That is taking experiences and universalizing them, taking repetitive occurrences and universalizing them. The whole principle of drying and evaporation by rapid and very massive expansion is an Aquarius principle. The principle of sublimation or effervescence is an Aquarius principle. Also, explosion, any kind of hyper-rapid expansion. Anatomically, the ankles, highly flexible, and very, that's where the agility and the adroitness in human motion comes from, more than from the knee. The heel, it's both tender and dominating at the same time. We say, I bruised his heel, or we say, crushed under his heel. The Achilles tendon, very stretchable, but at the same time vulnerable. In fact, the great heroes, there are two spots that all the great heroes were harmed by, and one was in the center of the back between the shoulder blades, that's the Siegfried spot, and the other is the Achilles heel. And it's sort of like Leo and Aquarius represent the center of the universe, and wherever there's centralization, there is vulnerability. The circulatory system, the arterial circulation is ruled by Jupiter, and the venous circulation is ruled by Venus. The spleen used to be called the gateway to chaos, because it is where the inflow, the primary inflow of solar energy enters through the spleen. And it's also where the red blood cells die and the white blood cells are created. Do you know that people with clairvoyance actually see that if you're angry when you're eating, the particles of food that become part of white blood cells, actually the angry thoughts produce the kinds of white blood cells that are tend us toward cancer. Well, there are four different kinds of white blood cells. I don't remember the name. It's one of these things that's hard to remember them all, but you can look it up. Positive, moral, philosophical, and psychological things, good as intuitively dictated, without judgment. Also, good as utilitarianism, the most good for the most people. good as proliferation of altruistic love, good as universal education, good as awakening, good as shock. Sometimes there's a motive for common sense, motive to renew things by changing them. Sometimes there's a personal philosophy of uniqueness. But Aquarius also has the concept of the common man, just like there is common sense in those paradoxes. Sometimes there's a personal philosophy of humanism. Some of the potential negatives, very often aloof and cool and dispassionate, impersonal. Sometimes there's an ivory tower kind of thing. And indifference, I don't want to get involved. And sometimes with that high point of view, there is a slacking that takes place. It doesn't make any difference anyway. Like in the big picture, it's not going to make any difference. And that's a way of escaping personal responsibility. It's a sign that can be frenzied, fanatic, and eccentric. Be shocking. And it likes independence, which is not freedom. Independence is where you act on your own, whether it's good for the general good or not. Sometimes it is crackpot or pseudoscience. Sometimes it's sudden and inconsistent, and then it's unbudging. It is sometimes psychologically preemptive. It assumes that the end way ahead. And sometimes it's speculative. Again, depending on whether it is the Uranian or the Saturnian side or alternating between them. By polarity, it is positive. It is extroverted, but not excessively so. Sometimes it's very simple and optimistic, but not exceptionally so. By attribute, it's a fixed sign. It likes timeless universals, even without renewals. And it likes unbending convictions, especially if the conviction is altruistic. It's an air sign, so it represents large air masses, like the polar air masses or the Hawaiian high, those stationary high fronts. Any kind of field in the air, explosive air, gas, electricity, radiation. The co-rulers are Uranus and Saturn. Very unique, very standard. Very new, very permanent. Very dry, very tight. The detriment is the sun. The sun doesn't like that kind of impersonality. And the character of individualism is not real strong in Aquarius. No planets are exalted, and no planets have their fall. People who have the sun in Aquarius, the Pickards, who were the first great balloonists, Boyle, whose law is about the random behavior in gases. Here's somebody that was very cool and very cosmopolitan, at least until the cops pinched her, Zsa Gabor. Somebody that was very much of a futurist, Horace Greeley. Somebody extremely inventive, Lewis Carroll. Here's one that was socialistic, John L. Lewis. Here was an altruist, but he was a conservative altruist, Abraham Lincoln. Someone who saw the whole idea of gender neutralization in negative ways, Germaine Greer. Somebody who was cold and experimental and needed primal screams to loosen her up a little bit, Yoko Ono. I can take cheap shots if I want. Humanitarian, Charles Dickens. Very creative, very speculative, Wolfgang Mozart. The most beloved of all the transcendentalists, Plato. Here is somebody who was very humane, very progressive, but he was too progressive for the world to appreciate him, Adlai Stevenson. Here was the cool gunslinger that was always kept this cool, Randolph Scott. For universal knowledge, Francis Bacon. For evolutionary consciousness, Charles Darwin. For modernism, and who wanted that really sparse, clear thing as tedious writing, Gertrude Stein. Here's one that likes to feel that she's liberated, Helen Gurley Brown, is Aquarius. Here's cold and dry, Ronald Coleman. Here's somebody that's extremely futuristic and anticipatory, Jules Verne. And here's the intellectual romantic, George Gordon, Lord Byron. And here is the stingy Aquarius, Jack Benny. And again, the universal intellect, James Joyce. Here, a freethinker, Thomas Paine. Here's a freethinker and an exhibitionist at the same time, Eartha Kitt. I love Eartha Kitt, man. If they made a movie with her, I'd go to see it, just to see her. Here's civil rights, Betty Friedan. A quirky humanist, Bobby Burns. Electric, Volta. Innovative, Franklin Roosevelt. Innovative, stubborn, and unique, Ronald Reagan. Scientific, Copernicus. Another electric one, Ampere, was an Aquarius. Here's one that's really radical, Angela Davis. And an eerie one, Mia Farrow. Here's one that was splenetic and stubborn, Douglas MacArthur. Progressive and universal, Havelock Ellis. Here's one that was cold and odd, Tallulah Bankhead. And one for unique light, Monet was an Aquarius. Here's one of my favorite people in my life, very adroit, very subtle, Edgar Bergen. Here's somebody light and airy, Mendelssohn. Here's somebody very cool and insightful, Colette. And somebody who was very cool all the way around, Kim Novak. And then there was the man that read, in his day, he read all of the nonfiction section of the New York Public Library. Thomas Edison was an Aquarius. Yeah, that's quite a feat, yeah. In abstract, Aquarius rules electricians, statistics, humanists, aeronautics, freethinkers, electronics, induction, space, instrumentation, technician, sociologists, air conditioners, pilots, radio, engineers, computers. Not the programming, that's Virgo. Idea people, batteries, sodium chloride, scientists, anarchists, inventors, crusaders, leftists of all degrees, psychologists, not psychiatrists, meteorologists, and explorers. In the ascendant, it usually produces taller people. Not always, but usually. And people who are very composed. And they usually have very open expressions, not narrowed brows and things like that. Sometimes they're priggish. And sometimes they have distant looks. And sometimes they have a wild, wide-eyed stare about them. Some of them are extremely long-faced. And if Saturn is dominant, they are very restrained. Sometimes they have electric hair. And especially in females, there you sometimes see that exaggerated teardrop chin. Usually there's always a long chin. They're usually quite shy and quiet. Often they have bear-like shoulders. And They're often a little bit darker, independent of race, a little bit darker. They have a brisk walk, and they're usually very polite people. The 11th house represents all opportunities for ideal situations. That's the general. Some of those ideal situations are dreams, or daydreams, or wishes. Some of them are things that are done for their own sake, art for art's sake, utopian things. Some of them are charities. Some of them are do-good organizations. The 11th house also represents opportunities for impersonal interactions, friendships, associates, acquaintances, roommates, and the most difficult of all, your mate's children, if there were children from another marriage. There is an indifference there, but there's also a difficulty. Opportunities for future ripeness, that is, sudden new introductions of things. Unexpecteds in life are found in the 11th house. Experiments, opportunities to do new things in flexible ways. Community education, so that the whole community is lifted. Opportunities for impersonal creation, that is, things that bring you to inspiration or intuition that are not dependent on your personality. Children of the mind, shared ideas, impersonal acting, where you lose yourself to the role, and any kind of universal expression. The 11th house in abstract or in horary astrology, international relations, multinational firms, mass movements, any kind of homosexuality or other sexuality movement, futures, upper rooms, together with the 5th house, the theater, civic organizations, speculations, humanitarian organization, lofts, sociological trends, stepchildren, trends in charities, associations, utopian movements, and adoption trends. And that's it. Well, we actually even got 90 minutes out of not much information. And you're still talking to me yet.